to be here with you all. Thank you. I love Canada. I had a cousin and an uncle and aunt who lived here. I spent a part of a summer in Sandy Lake, Ontario. And if anyone knows where that is, no one. Okay. It's really far north, and it's really cool. So think of this session. I invite you to think of this session really as a place between what Paul shared and what Henry shared. And so there was an audible here earlier that Rick made. We swapped some places, and I think it was a divine audible, because as I heard both of those, it really helped me connect some dots and also see some things within that journey space. And so I invite you to kind of put some of the things that I'll share in between both of those. Part of that is because I'm a Xennial. If any of you know what a Xennial means, it means I'm someone who's stuck right between the millennial generation and the Gen X. And so I've got one foot in both, and I can kind of identify with both, but a little stuck in the middle. This was the original title. Another way that I like to talk about this one is just simply, can anything good come out of big tech? I'll talk a little bit about tech. I'll talk a little bit about Microsoft and some of the work there. Part of this will be a bit of a journey story of my life and some of the things I've been wrestling with. Appreciate a lot of the things that have been shared before. It is a journey. I'll share some of the principles, some of the questions, and really just invite a continued conversation in all of the space. First, a couple headlines that I like and appreciate over the last year. We've seen this amazing tech lash against big tech in a number of different fashions. This was the word of the year last year, which was 2018, at the end of 2018, about a year ago. This is The Economist that said this was the word of the year, and just has really continued. Americans believe social networks, of course, make the news worse. You can see many headlines like this. And over the last couple of weeks, of course, it's gotten a little bit worse, and I'll highlight some of those. At the same time, you know, there's amazing benefits of technology. And so this is just one example that at the same time we talk about how bad it is for social networks, we can talk about how good it is for other things, whether that's healthcare, how we can use new technology combined with software and hardware that can do some really amazing things that couldn't be done even just a few years ago. This is another one that I like. This is the Pope weighing in on the future of AI and the dangers of it, the incredible bias of it. That was a great, an unfortunate reality of seeing that just this last week from the Apple Card and some of the bias that's inherent within some of the machine learning work and the data work that's done when we're using biased data sets or when it's programmed by an inherently undiverse team of people. And this was an example of the Microsoft, this is our president, Brad Smith, meeting with the Pope really to discuss some of these issues and certainly from an ethical perspective, really try to continue to work through and struggle with some of these things. Quickly on the point of AI, roughly 20% of all jobs will be impacted, potentially changed or ended over the next 10 to 20 years. So this will be very significant. It shouldn't be unexpected. It's sort of like when automobiles were invented, we didn't need people to make horsewhips anymore or buggies. Those jobs changed, and other jobs were created as part of that process. Excuse me. Another great example, though, of how technology can be used is this one, Scene AI. So if you want to play around with an app later today, this is a great example of one that Microsoft has put out really just to help you understand what's happening around you. This is specifically for visually impaired people. It will scan in a room and help understand what that might look like. It can read things out loud. It's really a way just to help understand what's happening around you with technology that we have today. A little bit of background on my journey. I grew up in Indiana. This was my grandpa. He was a conservative Mennonite, and I'll tell a little bit more about that story later. Very influenced by trips internationally when I was in my early teens to India and Taiwan with my parents. Meanwhile, my wife was born in Cambodia, and she grew up there during the time of the Khmer Rouge. She was a refugee out of that country. That's her peeking out from behind the statue, if you can see that, along with her mother and grandmother. And as a family, they escaped out of that environment, got through refugee camps in Thailand, Philippines, and eventually ended up in California. We met in D.C. at our church there, and part of that then led into an international life together. With Microsoft, we were in Ireland for 2 years. We were then in Vietnam for 5 years, both in Hanoi and Ho Chi Minh City, and have three wonderful children. This was the bike that I faithfully rode for a few years in the streets of Ho Chi Minh City, and they are now growing up back in Washington where we are today. The trip back was really an opportunity to work in another team at Microsoft, and that was a new team, Tech for Social Impact, that was started about 2 years ago, really to help how can Microsoft connect with nonprofits in a more significant way. How can nonprofits use technology to further their mission in whatever they do? There's about 4 million nonprofits in the world. How can Microsoft bring these capabilities to those nonprofits? So I came back to help set up that team. The general manager of that team was someone I'd worked with before. And that team went from about 5 people to 90 plus people in 18 months. So if you imagine what that life was like, it was like this. And really just a way of how can we bring some of the goodness of technology to what's happening. And so this is another part of the team, AI for Humanitarian Action, and some of the topics that they work on. And so if you're curious about these things, please feel free to go learn more. The team really does focus in these specific areas, disaster response, refugees and displaced people, human rights, and needs of children. And so we do have a pretty focused effort around where we want to see this applied, where we want to see help for that. Another part of my journey, though, is really a bit of a vocational journey. And this was one of growing up in Indiana, of not having a number of maybe professional models for an obvious reason. My grandpa was an amazing person, a church planter in Kentucky during his time, later on taught Bible in, I think it was Virginia and Ohio, and raised an amazing family here of my dad, his brothers, their families, their spouses, et cetera. And it was really an amazing family. It's an amazing legacy. And they all had amazing roles. One was a pastor, Nate and Chris are in Shanghai. Another was a missionary, then led a Bible college. Another was a missionary and then led a missions organization. Another one was a missionary here in Canada. That's my dad. He was a pastor, counselor. My mom was a social worker. Anyone really good at pattern recognition? We're not going to take bets. What do you think? Next one. Oh, pastor and missions president. And last one, this is my aunt. Yep, pastor. So if there was a family business, this was kind of my family business. And in my generation, I was the first not to go into the family business, right? This would have been kind of the pressure, if there was a pressure, of what I should do. Thankfully, I was reading other things. I was reading this. This is an example of what I was reading as a teenager or preteen. And this is, you know, Exodus 31, of all the places you get career inspiration, it's this one. But it's this idea of being chosen to make, that Bezalel was filled with the Spirit of God, with wisdom, with understanding, with knowledge, to make, to design, to cut, to work, and to engage in all kinds of crafts. And so this was what I was reading as a 12, 14-year-old, thinking, well, where does that take me? Later on, I found this. This is actually now named an Academy of Arts and Design in Jerusalem, after this character in the Old Testament. Another inspiration has been mentioned by Henry earlier, the story of Eric Little. If you're younger than me and you haven't seen Chariots of Fire, please go watch it. If you're older than me and haven't seen Chariots of Fire, please go watch it. It has a beautiful soundtrack, beautiful script. And it is really this idea, and some of the quotes in there, by the way, were not really said by him, but they're a great inspired screenplay. There's really this idea of being made fast. And this idea that, you know, as I interpret it, everyone is made fast. Everyone has some sort of gifting and purpose and abilities. And that's important that we recognize that and find out how does that path take us into the purpose of the kingdom, into the kingdom. And is that classic line, when he runs, he was made fast, and when he runs, he feels God's pleasure. And just that idea of that purpose. Paul mentioned this one, another great one. If you haven't read Oz Guinness's The Call, this is a really easy one. It's very accessible. There are others in a spectrum on this topic. This is probably the easiest one. Just this idea of devotion and dynamism, that we do it with a purpose. And this was covered earlier, but this book was given to me by one of my uncles. We'll rename nameless for the rest of the story. He literally gave it to me soon after college, and he said, if I would have had this book at your age, I probably would have been a doctor. He had been accepted to seminary, and he had been accepted to medical school. And in the context, didn't have a network like this, didn't have examples of other people like this. And and took the other path, right? Clearly could have taken a different path. And so I say that just as an encouragement of these things are incredibly important. As Paul said earlier, as we're encouraging that generation of the why. Think of these resources. These are the ways that we can help encourage along the way. Another one is Every Good Endeavor by Tim Keller. This is another classic. If you haven't read this one, this is amazing. Really this idea of this co-cultivation, of working within creation, working within what God has created, and we're part of that process. A couple of principles along the way that have been helpful to me. This idea of talents, and I love that Henry mentioned this one earlier, because it can definitely be used in different ways. This one I definitely heard from my dad at times. Too much is given, much is required. I didn't get beat with many sticks along the way, but this at some point can feel that way in terms of could be a driver. Since other people have self-identified their Myers-Briggs, I'm an ENTJ. I'm also an Enneagram 3, so if you think about achievement, it's not unusual to feel like this identifies. At the same time, it's more, now that I understand it more, it's more of a sense of responsibility. When we're given these things, whether it's opportunity or just the outcomes of this, it is this idea of responsibility. What will we do with it? And I'll come back to that one a little bit later. Another one is a classic one in my tradition of stewardship, of being good stewards of what we've been given. One of my favorites in this one is the story of Joseph, that he had these roles and this responsibility that was not his. They were not his assets. They were not his, but he was put to be responsible for them and to take care of them. And last one, this has been one for me that's certainly been part of the wrestling in the more recent years of this idea of just this warning, I think, more than anything, is what does it matter if we achieve things or we do things and yet it leads us down a path to where we forfeit our soul, to where we lose our faith. And so that has always been something for me that has at times felt like a caution or a catch within that. Another couple of things to share, just some of the key decisions along the way. If some of this fits, take it. If it doesn't, feel free to ignore it. Spouses, partners, a really important one for me. Pali and I met in D.C. at our church. We were very different. She was from California. I ate rice and beans. It was really just, initially I thought this is no way this would work, and yet it is what sometimes happens, that diversity can create an amazing kind of opportunity together. That is mostly what happens in my life along the way. And that really is this idea that some of the things that we've been able to do together, we probably couldn't have done unless it was that team. When I was trying to get this job in Vietnam, it was this idea of, well, you know, it makes sense because your wife's from Southeast Asia. If that hadn't happened, I probably wouldn't have gotten the job. And so there really was an element of that. That sometimes this is a partnership that comes together that helps this journey along. Another one is the idea of roots. Pretty much everywhere we've moved, we are pretty intentional about finding the church that we will be before we arrive. And so sometimes that's just been providence, that my parents would have someone over and they said, oh, well, we know a church in D.C. You should, you know, you're moving there, you should check this one out. That became a pattern then. As we moved to the next place, it was, you know, literally the research, where is the network, who are the people that know them, how can we reach out and connect and then have that place. Those international transitions certainly they go much easier when you have a faith community to be a part of from the beginning. And then this other question around what does success look like, and I know this has been mentioned a few times, but this is not a one that you solve once and then you have it figured out. I certainly don't. It's one that I struggle with in different ways, in different times, in different stages of what does that mean and what should I do next? What does that mean? Some further questions along the way that I've certainly wrestled with at times. Career, the disappointments when I applied to this job 3 times one time before I got it. The first time, it was literally God protecting me from what would have happened. I think I would have been fired. The second time, it was a different situation of really facing some tough times that probably needed a level of maturity to be able to do it well. And that, I think, at times really is part of the process. Sometimes it's also thinking about where we might have made mistakes. And I think this is where those things are. You know, we don't want to second guess those things, but really, I think, as Henry shared some things great, really taking time to pray through them and think through them. I once had a mentor, when I had made a decision, he literally looked at me and was like, "Did you pray about that?" And it was the type of thing that, a good reminder. Another one for me at times has been this idea of you know, being salt in the earth. Are we not salty enough? And I think the last presentation is a good reminder of that, a question on that. For me, that has certainly been true at times. There have been times when I haven't spoken about my faith that later on I immediately regretted and wish I had. And I think that's something that I'm still working through, of how do I do that well, and how do I do that, especially in the context of the Pacific Northwest, when things are not welcome, and a perspective is easily feels discriminated against, even though that's not the intent of sharing faith. Another one is this idea of Esther moments, and of course, this is a beautiful one in that story of how we land at a time and place for certain types of things. And there have been examples of this in my current role, where actually connected to the previous presentation, of really this idea of at what point does this idea of religious freedom need to be protected? And there have been moments about a year ago when I needed to stand up for something I thought I needed to, because I thought we had crossed the line on what was appropriate for that, that we had actually moved too far in a direction and we needed to be called back to say, no, religious freedom is important, especially in the nonprofit sector, and we can't lose that as part of our work. A couple more, then this is just one that I like putting here. Again, it's from Timothy Keller. It's this idea of really how do we think about our abilities, our opportunities, and then put that into this idea of the kingdom of God. Where does that serve people? Where does that help? And this idea of motivations, Henry also mentioned this one. I think this is one I certainly have struggled with in the last couple of years, and really getting and wrestling is the right way to think about it, of am I just doing this for the money? Or am I really doing this because I think, you know, this is what God wants me to be doing? These things are never binary. They're never just an either or. Usually there's five reasons I can come up with why I'm doing something. But that reminder of, okay, why though is it? Is it really because you want your kids back in the U.S. or is it because you want to just help run a startup business at Microsoft? Or is it because, like, all of those things are true. But being able to weigh those things and really struggle with those things. And we're coming to that now as a life transition for our family of, and this is one of the stories that I've really kind of, I don't know if I have this one right yet, so I'm sharing this one partly as a feedback loop of helping me think through this one, of the story of when Jesus called Peter. So Peter was a fisherman. What did he want to do? He wanted to catch fish. What did Jesus do? He gave him all the fish he could ever have. He pretty much ruined his career. What did Peter do? He didn't sit on the beach and eat a bunch of fish tacos. He followed Jesus and he said, what do I do now, right? And I've had a couple years like this where the boat gets filled up. And then I have to ask that question, what does that mean? Do I stay down this path? Do I not? And I still struggle with it. And it's now to a point where we're ready. We're taking that next leap. We're taking that next step. So this is not it's actually not public yet. So please don't put it on LinkedIn just yet. But I've put in my resignation, and I'll be leaving Microsoft at the end of this month. And we're headed back to Vietnam. I'm going to be leading a small tech startup in Vietnam. It is not a big company. It's a small company. Maybe I'm doing it for the fun of it. Maybe I'm doing it because I'm a three and I want to see if I can do it. All of those things are true. Maybe it's because I want to be back in Asia. I do. All of those things are true. But it does feel like the next part of this journey. And it is a struggle. It is a wrestle. I still wake up some morning saying, this is the stupidest decision I could ever make. And maybe it is. But it does feel like the right next thing. And so small team, great fun. Love the technology. We do some really interesting work with AI to help e-commerce businesses grow. That's what we do. And I think this is part of, for me, it is continuing this journey of questioning, of struggling with that, and saying, yep, you know, when your boat's full, don't be afraid to go do something else. And when God has blessed you in a certain way, don't be afraid to go do something else. If I need a job in 12 months, I'm going to reach out to all of you, okay? So please connect with me on LinkedIn if you want. And I look forward to continuing this discussion there. So thank you very much.
Great. We've got time for a few questions. Yeah. Sure. You want to go too. Great. We've got time for a few questions. So we'll put the number back on the screen. So it's 778-628-5131. And we'll have time for probably two or three questions. So, initial question, when you look at making this move, it's obviously a huge move. So, what are some of the main things you considered, and pressures maybe positive and negative, in terms of making this move?
Yeah, I think there's always multiple reasons. One, I have a heart for Asia. I love that space, partly because of the years there. We were there for 5 years. So there's part of that. It's an opportunity to continue to grow as a leader. And I think that's part of what I also saw. I love the technology. I love the work we do. And there's part of that. And I got to the point for this type of opportunity, I've been advising the company for the last year. I got to the point where I was like, why wouldn't I do this? And it honestly came down to money. Like, well, you wouldn't do it just because, and I wasn't comfortable with that. And that was the struggle, really, for the last, I would say, 6 months to a year on that one. Mm-hmm.
And then in terms of being in Vietnam, maybe talk about the presence of the faith community in that context. And it's really interesting from a business standpoint, who can actually go to Vietnam and have an impact from a Christian standpoint?
Yeah, that's part of it. And I don't lead with that because I don't want to over-spiritualize some of these things because they are often, but this is the fun part of it's business and it's faith, right? Mm-hmm. You don't go to Vietnam as a missionary. You don't go to Vietnam as a pastor. You won't get a visa. You need to be there for business or a tourist. And so that's why I partly loved being in that country. We were very involved in the international church there. Loved that context, and Satya, if I can quote Satya, because I should, because I'm a Microsoft employee still, you know, he says this really well in terms of how he thinks about guiding the company, and he says, you know, what can Microsoft uniquely contribute? And so it really gets to this idea of core competency, it gets to the idea of where can we add value. It also is a steer of what we shouldn't do. And so as I was back in the U.S. and then back and forth between Vietnam, it was like, you know, where can I uniquely contribute after years there, and then in this tech space for this like long, what makes sense?
And maybe explain when you mentioned about AI that it will save the workforce 20%, or there was a reference here to just maybe explain that a bit more.
Yeah, I'll say it more bluntly. You can read on the internet about different predictions on this one, but you know, roughly 20% of jobs will probably be ended. We like to say dislocated because it's a nicer way to say it. But what it really means is they'll need to shift into other jobs. So, you know, and it's a combination of automation, robotics, and AI, machine learning. It will be more massive than we ever recognized, and it will happen faster than we recognize. And so massive chunks of the workforce. And so that's some of the work that we do in philanthropies is around how do we think about retraining and reskilling that needs to happen when you're in your 30s or 40s or 50s, and you do want to work for another 10, 15, 20 years.
Mm-hmm. And then maybe just clarify what Microsoft does in terms of working with nonprofits, just so people are clear on, you know, what does Microsoft give them? Like, what's your department
doing?
Yeah,
actually, I didn't cover that slide very well. There's the slide in there was really about one of the projects I worked on for about 8-9 months, which was really opening up our top cloud service. It's the one that says Microsoft 365. We donate cloud services to any nonprofit in the world. And so that is really for the 4 million nonprofits around the world to get stuff for free from Microsoft. It's typically Office 365, Microsoft 365, Azure. So if you know any part of this type of cloud services, these are the types of things that we donate to nonprofits. And then everything else is at charity pricing. So literally, and we run this team as a social business. I should have added that part too. We are not a profit center for Microsoft. We do sell and we donate. And so together that makes up a social business to really give back into a nonprofit space.
Right. So just to be practical, so if there's people connected to nonprofits here, like what do they do? Like how does it work exactly?
I get a pitch. If you're involved with any nonprofit on the board, volunteering or donating, please have them go to Microsoft.com/nonprofits and just sign up here. You literally register there. You get approved, and then you get free stuff. And so at a minimum, take advantage of all the free stuff you can get from Microsoft.
And so businesses shouldn't register as a nonprofit to get it. Would that be true?
That will be a waste of your time.
Okay, thought I'd just clarify that. All right, well, that's great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.